Robin Miller, we have another week in IndyCar, and this is a fun one. We are not just going racing with the Grand Prix of Indy this weekend, but we're kicking off the month of May, the proper month of May, coming out of Phoenix at the end of April. We have the 101st 500 coming up. We have a GP before that runs on Saturday. All that current stuff aside, brother, you've had the best day or two of anybody I can think of, having spent a couple hours with Anthony Joseph Foyt privately at the IMS Museum, going through, filming a feature, looking at all of his cars that are on display. And then you got to spend the next day with the day after with good old Smoke and Fire. So before we get to all this current IndyCar stuff, tell me about some time with one super legend and one growing legend.
I told AJ the last three or four times I talked to him on the phone, I said, you're not going to believe how cool this exhibit is in the museum. And, you know, I think he kind of thought, you know, I've seen those things before, but he never saw it till, so NBC, the Speedway, because it was AJ Foyt, was nice enough to close the museum down after hours, and we had the old Clint Brunner golf cart, so Steve Shunk and I picked AJ up in the out in the parking lot so he wouldn't have to walk, and took him in. So the first time he saw us when we drove in, and I think he was pretty dazzled, because I don't think he expected to see all the cars that he used to race and win in all lined up. So I just think that the most important thing is that he was just so, I don't want to say emotional, but he was just so overwhelmed that there was, I don't know, I mean, here's his midgets and sprint cars and dirt cars and Indy cars that worked and Indy cars that didn't work, and the first car he made Indy in 1958, and the Land Speed Oldsmobile, and the car he won Daytona in, the stock car. I mean, it was just, and you're never going to see another exhibit like that, because nobody else is going to drive that. Nobody in this day and age can drive that many different types of cars, as we know. So that was 2 hours, and he was talking like a magpie, and it was a lot of fun. And NBC, you know, it's they're going to use the feature on Carb Day, but they're probably going to get 5 minutes out of the 2 hours. So we got to figure out how to get, I don't know, maybe get DVD. I don't know. It just has to. It'd be fun to share with everybody that's a race fan, just because it's so cool. So
yeah, the full 2 hours. That's pure gold. No matter how much that's cut down for the broadcast, we definitely need to get a hold of that and share that, because, you know, it's crazy to think that the crankiest and toughest of the old legend sounds like he's actually softening a little bit, or maybe just for a little small window for a couple hours. But folks need to see that, because, you know, you don't, how many times, like you said, are you going to get to spend 2 hours with AJ Foyt reminiscing, going through a museum with everything of importance he's ever driven?
And, you know, he's sometimes those things, he's there for 10 minutes, let's go. But it was pretty meaningful, I think, because he's 82, and I think, you know, he's been through so many different things, and I think he, you know, had a little time to reflect on his career, and the pictures and the way that the people, Ellen Byerly and at the Speedway, the way they put it up, and AJ and the other AJ took care of the cars, and Steve Shunk and his buddy Brad Hoffman put together this awesome brochure that you get for, when you pay your $8 or $10 to get in the Speedway, you get this beautiful, it's the history of AJ Foyt in pictures and words, and they're on eBay now today for $45. So I told Foyt, he's really made it.
And tell me about this amazing, amazing thing. The video's just been going insane on Racer. The time you got to spend with AJ and Tony Stewart, with Tony climbing into a car that has significant importance to the Speedway and to AJ as well.
Well, it was Foyt's first winning car. Foyt Travis did it, and it was an AJ Watson copy. And they want Stewart to drive it on race morning, and he said, "Well, I think I might need some practice. I'm not sure. I don't want to kill. I don't want the thing to. I don't want to pull out of the pits and kill it." And they said, "Well, you want to come over and drive it on Wednesday?" And he said, "Oh, sure." So he rolls in, and I think the thing that's interesting about Foyt and Stewart is they're actually the same person. They're just separated by 40 years. I mean, it's the same personality, that same spirit of competition, and Foyt's been very vocal about, you know, I think Stewart's the one guy in this whole group that could probably have followed my footsteps and done what I did, and And I think that when Stewart went out, you know, I mean, it's not possible to smile much wider than he was smiling. And to hear that offie, I mean, the offie just sounds so good. He only gassed it going through the short chute because, you know, the tires are pretty worn. And I think that I couldn't tell at the end who had more. I don't know who enjoyed it more, Foyt or Tony, because, you know, it was an interesting, it's just interesting to see these two guys that won so many races and have so many fans and are separated. You know, and Stewart said, which unfortunately I didn't get on our video, and I forgot about it later. He said, I'd trade in my championships in NASCAR if I could have run back there with you guys. And, you know, Foyt was really gracious about, you know, I think we had a lot of fun. You could run five nights a week. And that's what Stewart's, you know, he's going to run the little 500 in a couple weeks. He's going to run Oswego, I think, next week. I mean, he's got all these different race cars he wants to drive, and NASCAR was so restrictive. So he is an old soul and a 42-year-old body that could have probably made it in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, says all he's been saying his whole life, I was born 30 years too early, and that's probably true. But I think that the fact that, you know, you got to see, you know, Stewart asked Foyt all these great questions about what, you know, what about rubbing your elbow on the right rear tire? Oh, yeah, Foyt said you had to be careful with that. I mean, just things that you never think about if you're a driver today. And talking about how you could watch the guys, you know, I said something to Stewart about how cool it was that you could watch guys work the car in the corners back then in the roadsters. That's why you kind of liked it, because you could see who was hustling and who wasn't. And he said, yeah, that's the sad thing about even the midgets and sprint cars today. They're so enclosed you can barely see the driver. Mm-hmm. So just a great day, and I'm glad we got invited to come out and do it, and I'm glad you put that video together, and it worked out just well. Because, you know, Steve Shunk, amateur photographer, does a good job, and I made sure to turn on the microphone and get a new battery for the experience, so I knew you were proud of me.
We're going to have some more fun during the month of May, Robin. Obviously, our man, Mr. Rufus Jones, is coming into town, so I know that we're going to spend some time with him, sit down and reminisce, capture some good stuff for a half hour, an hour with our boy Shunk as well. We'll look forward to the Uncle Bobby experience, which we need to capture some of that. And, you know, that's one of the cool things about Indianapolis. Don't always get to see it. A lot of times it's just fun that happens in the moment, but folks are either coming up to the media center or, you know, head out to dinner. And just May is just a really amazing time where you get to see a lot of people that you don't get to have time with as often as you want. And you get a lot of cool memories. So looking forward to that part of the month, too. If we look at some of the other things that have happened after your fun here with the Legends, and even a little bit before, Robin, had a wave of confirmations with drivers who we knew about and told people were coming. Had some unveilings of liveries and whatnot, but we finally had our boy, our nervous Argentinian friend, Ricardo Juncos, confirm Spencer Pigot and Sebastian Saavedra and his team. We know that Tom Brown is going to be the overarching engineer behind all that. And we're expecting to see Steve Newey most likely get paired with Spencer. Very likely going to see Dave Cripps working with Sebastian Saavedra. I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it. I think as much time and effort and money that Ricardo has put into making this happen, with all the instability that was going on coming into this, Robin, oh, this guy's going to drive for sure. Okay, now he's not. Well, maybe he is. Maybe who knows? This guy, that guy. You helping Ricardo with some phone numbers for drivers, I think I might have as well. Good to see things finally get locked down. Also good for IndyCar to realize that, hey, this is a team that could and should be here on the grid more than just one time a year in the future.
I think, like your story, I was just reading your story about Zach Veach and Jack Harvey. I mean, two guys that proved themselves in life but didn't win the championship and have all that money. Spencer Pigot's really, really been impressive this year, done a nice job for Ed Carpenter, and it was nice they had to let him out. But, I mean, this kid needs to be in the Indy 500. He needs to run as many ovals as he can. And then Saavedra's a hard guy to figure. He won the pole for the Grand Prix a couple years ago. He's had his moments, but just seemed to, I don't know if he, something to, you know, I think what he's probably had two full-time rides, and one was with, was Ganassi the one year he was, that was his best shot, maybe Marshall, I can't remember.
Yeah, and he shared, split the car
he
with
shared
Sage.
It, that's right, with Sage.
And he then had most of a full season with Bachelart before that, but, you know, it's been sprinklings of Dragon Racing and, you know, Brian Herta and Autosport, you know, they made their Indy 500 debut together back in the day and barely made it, but, you know, did finally make it in. So, I mean, Saavedra, one of those kids who, you know, has talent. You just don't know how much. I mean, we know that he's talented, but I'm talking, is this kid a potential race winner, a future champion? It's hard to make any arguments that the answer is yes. Not because we know for sure that he doesn't possess those talents, but because he hasn't had the time, the consistency, year after year. He hasn't gone through the Joseph Newgarden situation where you and I didn't say in 2012, oh yeah, Newgarden, future champion. We knew the kid was great in lights, knew that he won that title, but there was nothing about his rookie season with Sarah that said, oh yeah, Roger's going to come calling, this kid's going to just beat everyone on the grid. We thought he was good, didn't know how good. He then had many years to develop himself and become someone that everyone realized, oh crap, this kid's coming for our heads. Saavedra's never had that. Nothing really even close. And in the couple of times that he's had a good ride, he's done some, he's definitely performed above expectations. We saw that Zach Veach unveiled his AJ Foyt livery, a little underwhelming. We saw Jack Harvey, Michael Andretti, and Michael Shank unveil the livery on their car. Lots of colors. One of the things that I enjoyed about looking at Jack's car, there's some sponsors on there, Robin, that was like, oh, that's interesting. Gap Guard, for example. That's Dale Pelfrey's company. He was part of Stefan Wilson's sponsorship package last year at Indianapolis. That's now made its way onto Jack Harvey's car. And Auto Nation is another interesting one where they've been part of Ryan Hunter Ray's Andretti program. And I know a little bit of tea that there were concerns that, let's just say that Jack had found a good sponsor in Auto Nation to help make his Indy 500 debut and to make sure that Auto Nation was happy and stayed with the team. But the team made sure that Jack was running with them as a result. Could have been with another team, but they made sure that Auto Nation stayed in the family with Jack. So good for him. Then also one that surprised me, Robin, was seeing Sirius XM on the side pod of Jack's car. It's almost like a throwback sponsor for Andretti because they were there in the kind of mid to late 2000s. Also sponsored their ALMS car for a while. So a lot of different colors on Jack's car and also some fairly interesting either histories or stories on how all those sponsors came together.
Well, it also illustrates to me that you can still get a sponsor for the Indy 500. It's almost impossible, it seems like, to get a sponsor for the full season for IndyCar, at least enough to fund the whole season. But Indy still has enough clout and enough, there's enough value there that you can get a sponsor. And I think that's, how do you go from just the Indy 500? I always think about Paul Tracy going to Geico and asking for $3 or $4 or $5 million, I think it's $5 million, and they said no, but we'll give you $1 million to run the Indy 500. We don't care about the rest of the races. So that, in a nutshell, is the biggest challenge, the biggest problem that IndyCar aspiring up and coming IndyCar drivers have to get to the next level and stay there. As Spencer Pigot often said, it's tough enough to get a ride; it's even tougher to keep it. So I'm just glad. I think all those. I mean, you know, I think all the guys that have come up with a ride are all pretty capable drivers, and that's, again, we've gone from, you know, there were many years that there were three or four people, or you just made you scratch your head, oh my God, how did they get a ride? But it's not like that anymore, and I think, so the field's got plenty of depth, and it looks like it's, you know, most of the teams have something on the side parts of the car that's not, you know, stands Sunoco from 16th in Georgetown, at least it's real money. So hopefully, you always just hope that somebody hits it big. And I mean, Rossi's victory last year, it didn't overwhelm Napa. Obviously, they're not the full-time sponsor, but they're still on the car, so it helped.
I thought the PT Geico thing was Paul going there asking for $5 million for the Indy 500. Wanted to pocket $4 million, and they said, "No, no, no, son, we'll give you $1 million." But I could have that wrong. He's got all those bagger motorcycles to build, or whatever the hell
those
things
right.
are. Also spoke with our boy Michael Shank, who this isn't the first time he's said it, but I think this is the first time he's said, "I want to be a full-time member of the IndyCar grid," and seen that that could actually be a real thing. that there could be a way to make that happen, either in partnership with Andretti, doing it on his own, helping another team, something, knowing that he's going to be running Jack Harvey, but part of the Andretti family. And it seems, at least according to Mike, they've already spoken about continuing to work together in IndyCar in the future, not giving up IMSA, not giving up sports cars, but looking to add the MSR brand to IndyCar in the future. I love the sound of it, and we're seeing really obvious dumb things that we know IndyCar needs more team owners, but when we go into the month of May and we see Michael Shank's name on the entry list, Ricardo Juncos' name on the entry list, of the many things that are cool about the 101st Indy 500, I think the forward-leaning, future-looking aspects of two new entrants, and can we keep them around and grow their involvement beyond just one race, that's the thing that might have me most excited of all.
Think how far along Shank might have been if we could have got an engine 3 or 4 years ago. That's still a black eye for IndyCar, and I'm just glad he's got the wherewithal and the desire to keep pushing for this, because you know he's you knew him. I mean, he was an open wheel driver. That's what he wants. He wants to have an open wheel team. That's he'll be around for 40 years. That's exactly who IndyCar needs. Same with Ricardo. Maybe Brian Bilardi. Maybe Trevor Carlin. I mean, if you could add four guys like that to the lineup in the next 2 or 3 years, I would feel so much better about IndyCar's future, because those guys are all racers. They want to stick around, and they're doing whatever's willing to keep the doors open. That's what you need.
Well, I'm still going to be semi-pissed at Shank for the rest of my life, because he took out my car in the 97 Las Vegas IRL race, which I think was his IRL debut as a driver. Took out our Greg Ray, Thomas Knapp Motorsports, Geno Racing entry when I remember how well we were doing it. We were doing well, but anyways, I give him crap. But yeah, Mike's one of the good ones. And when IndyCar sees someone that is motivated and wants to be a part of its family, you and I have spoken about, I'm always hesitant to say what other people should do with their money, but I can say that IndyCar for sure has been suffering in terms of people expressing interest in wanting to be there, right? Everyone loves the idea, oh, go IndyCar racing, great. Haven't been a lot of people knocking on the door saying, okay, I'll do it, sure, me. Well, now you've got one or two people that do. IndyCar has been helpful, not saying they haven't. You know, Ricardo Juncos would not be on the grid without IndyCar's assistance. Just looking to the future, if I'm having to do some budgetary planning, I'm probably getting on the phone with Shank, with Juncos, and saying, all right, what can we do? Are there things we can do to help? I mean, heck, you look at another thing from this week, Robin, which is pretty cool. We saw that IndyCar and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway announced a year-long initiative with the Indiana Donor Network to raise awareness for organ donation, tissue donation, etc. This is all stemming from Stefan Wilson's sponsor that brought him to the Indy 500 last year for his debut. And this is all part of a big incentive that Mark Miles and IndyCar came up with. This whole thing about helping to get Fernando Alonso into the 500. And by the way, we just went about 20 minutes without mentioning Fernando Alonso's name. So you and I definitely, I think, should win an award for that. But nonetheless, Mark Miles came up with something to help Steph, to look at how the power of IMS and its name and reach could help make Indiana Donor Network happy, to keep them engaged, to come back next year to sponsor Stefan. And that's what they did. So if I'm just looking at Shank, I'm looking at Juncos, beyond just saying, can we give you some money to help get you on the grid for more races, I'm hoping that they're also having conversations on the business side. How can we help you? How can we make your sponsors feel or find more value in being a part of this to get you guys signed up for full-time entries? So if we look at what's coming up this weekend, Robin, we have the Grand Prix of Indy. Do you like that event? We were obviously both there for the inaugural one, but I think 2014 or so. It seems to be moving along, and it's becoming part of the standard schedule for IndyCar, but I don't know if it's something you've taken a shine to, or is just something you can't wait to get out of the way for the real month of May to get started.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's on the schedule, but the attendance keeps going down because people want to go to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway to watch cars go fast on the oval. They don't care about road course racing. The first year they had a decent crowd. It's gone down ever since. They don't have a title sponsor anymore. So is it better than having 2,000 people on poll day, hell yeah. And it's on ABC. So, Mark Miles, he got the whole month of May on national television, and that was a huge step for IndyCar because they can promote qualifying, then they can promote the Indy 500, and, that part of it is great. It's just, it's really tough to... It's just tough to get people excited about going out there. I know a lot of people, and they either went once and said, no thanks, we'll wait for the Indy 500, and that's basically the attitude, I think. And, a lot of people say, let's move it to the end of the season and make it the season finale. Would that have a bigger crowd, a bigger impact? It could. You're at least in the Midwest where your fan base is. It would have a chance. But, I don't know. Mario... I know he was pretty upset when it was announced. I think everybody that's over 60 was probably all had the same. It was like, no, not a road course, not. But when you saw that nobody was ever coming to pole day again, Miles had to try something, and it's even if there's 15 or 20,000 people there, it looks pretty empty. But if it's on national television, then sponsors get some. Sponsors are going to get mentioned, and you get your car seen, so it works. It's worth it.
This could just be a thing because I'm from California and grew up dreaming of going to Indianapolis and getting there, and it took me a lot longer than I wanted. But if IMS was in my backyard, I don't know how I could stay away if I was a racing fan, knowing that you have one of the world's greatest sporting venues, not racing venues, just period venues, and a major race going on there. It's not like IMS has 30 races a year and you have to really be selective on which ones you want to go to. There aren't that many races. And yeah, I get it. No argument that the road course race is not what made Indianapolis famous, nor is it what's in everyone's heart. But good Lord, knowing that the ticket prices are relatively low, and you can go and watch some cool road racing in your backyard before the big oval portion of the event takes off. I'm not criticizing folks, I'm just saying if I lived there and I was just a fan of motor racing, it couldn't keep me away because it's frickin' Indianapolis. All right, so we've had some questions to wrap up here, Robin, about what should we look for this weekend. Chevy has won two in a row, places where high downforce make all the difference in competitiveness. Honda won the first two, where you definitely are running in high downforce, but the type of corners on those street courses don't really demand all of that high downforce configuration. Well, we're going to a place where there are a lot of high-speed corners. There's also a really long front straight, so it's not like folks are going to be bolting on every pound of downforce. Some are going to be, or most are going to be trimming out to some degree, but at least from what the engineers are telling me, you can look for Chevy, barring some sort of crazy crash that takes out all the Penske cars and all the Ed Carpenter mobiles, but unless something strange happens, IMS should be a place on the road course where Chevy gets its third race in a row with using that really, really good high downforce that they have, but also that very efficient downforce that they make. Would that be a bad thing, do you think? Do you think that might set up a little bit more drama going into the 500 where we expect to see Honda flex its muscles like it did last year on the Speedway? Or do you just not really give a crap?
I don't know that... I think Honda would gladly concede Saturday's race if they could win Indy again. And obviously everybody seems to think they have the horsepower advantage at Indy. But I was trying to remember last year, Pagano won. It was the first time John Menard had won a race at the Speedway in an open wheel car. What I can't remember is last year is if was Honda in the hunt at all? Was it a complete romp? I cannot remember.
It was rompy. It was Chevy rompy time. We had Hinch finish third, and we had Rahal finish fourth. So it wasn't a total sweep. But yeah, it was a Penske 1-2, and I don't recall Simon being particularly bothered by anyone in a Honda. I could be wrong, but it was definitely a Chevy 1-2, and knowing that at least so far this year we've seen some surprises from Honda. Of course, we're not counting out an improved Honda effort, but we certainly, it would be a surprise. It'd be a pretty cool surprise if Honda did actually turn the tables on Chevy at a place where no one can really figure out how they would.
Well, Chevy had the first, four qualified spots last year, and Graham was fifth. So I'm sure it'll be tough to, for Honda to get there. But anyway, this is the B main Saturday. We don't really care about this nearly as much as we care about 17 days from now, brother.
Absolutely. And with all that said, we're not going to do any kind of prognostications or predictions on the 500 yet, because we'll save that for next week, maybe the week after. I don't know. You and I are always horrible at predictions, but at least it gives folks stuff to make fun of us over and remind us on social media how wrong we were. And you also bet money on this stuff too, so you get
to... I was going to say, I'm much dumber than that. I actually bet on some of the things I think are going to happen.
All right, friends. Well, we are done with this week's Week in IndyCar News. If you have questions, send them to all of them to Robin on Facebook. Just blow up his Facebook page or his Miller's Mailbag address. You can hit me at Twitter, at Marshall Pruett, P-R-U-E-T-T, like Scott, although he's not my brother, or on Facebook or whatever else. But if you have questions going into the month of May, this is our Christmas, right, Robin? This is our favorite part of the year, where we go to the place where legends are made, and we get to spend time with those legends and watch new heroes made and all that kind of flowery stuff. But lots of questions tend to come in. We should have a bigger international audience with some old Spanish dude I've heard might be coming out. So, got questions, want to know a little bit more? We might have some answers for you. All right, I'm Marshall Pruett, and you are Robin Miller, and we will talk to you next week.